Welcome, everyone, to episode 35 of Magic FM. I'm unfortunately without Gabby this week. I have downgraded to Luis Scott Vargas at LSV. You're not a special guest this time because you're like a co-host, so you can't be a special guest. Sorry, Luis.
Yeah, I guess I'll take that since the special. I feel like the special part was really not meant in full seriousness anyway. It was reluctantly given at best.
At best. So you guys all know Luis. Hopefully you know me. I am Mashi Scanlon at Mashi Scanlon across all social media platforms. Of course, Luis, you can find at LSV. Boy, what a choice Twitter handle, by the way. LSV, three letters.
Yeah, so, it worked out nicely.
We got a great, great Magic FM for you this week. We're going to talk a little bit about the PT. We'll talk about the state of the game that Wizards just dropped. You know, there's a lot of exciting stuff. Specifically for you, I don't know if everybody knows, you play on a Mac. So big news for you. And then we've got, you know, some changes to jumpstart. And I did want to kind of pick your brain about why some of these choices were made. And all of this was built into the state of the game that Wizards dropped. And finally, we will end on a little bit of core 2021 talk, just out, fresh off the presses and right into Arena. So a lot of exciting stuff there. Before we dive into all of that stuff, I want to remind you that Magic FM is brought to you by channelfireball.com. You can use the code Gabby, even though she's not here right now. That does support this podcast. It supports all the amazing content and stuff that Gabby does, including her stream. So if you go to channelfireball.com, use that code Gabby, G-A-B-Y. You can use it to purchase cards. You can use it for CFB Pro. You can use it for just about anything. Just make sure you use it. Pre-selling still, yes. The whole timeline with Arena and physical Magic, it messed me up. I was going to say, we're selling, but we're not. We're
I almost forgot that these cards existed in real life. It's been so long since I've never seen a pack of Ikoria, so...
It's so funny. I'm actually going to be working. We have limited hours at the Game Center this weekend. So tonight for 4 hours and tomorrow for 6 hours. And I was helping set up all the displays. And I'm going to go there later today to help buy cards. And I'm pulling these boxes of Ikoria out. And I could just see the image. I'm like, what is this? And I realized, oh my gosh, this is a box of Ikoria. I think it was my first time seeing an actual box of Ikoria. And of course, M21 is already out. But M21, we're going to talk about it on here. If you are a member of CFB Pro, you'll see there's already deck lists and awesome stuff on there. I think Luis just posted his first M21 draft video on channelfireball.com. All those cards you see in the deck list on CFB Pro, in the draft on channelfireball.com, available right now for pre-order. Go to Channel Fireball, check it out, get all your M21 stuff there. Make sure you use the code Gabby, and we should have you taken care of. So please check that out. Of course, that does support the podcast. All right, Luis, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm good. I like you said, I just finished an M21 draft, and I've been enjoying playing with the new cards. I always like getting into a new Magic format. That's the best time for Magic for sure.
Yeah. I've actually read the reviews, and I like reading your review and I like reading Carson's pick order, but since you just drafted, and I know it's just one draft, any hot takes on M21 draft?
I had a lot of fun playing with a 5-mana 4/4 that makes another 4/4 if you have two of the same creature in play. The replicator, whatever it's called. And mm-hmm. I drafted a deck with three of those, three of another creature, two of another creature, and two of another creature. And it worked out pretty well. I got to do some pretty fun stuff with those.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah, you start doubling up, and prioritizing that, especially when you have three of them. Good God. Okay. So things are going well here. I'm super bummed, as I told you before we went live. I'm super bummed that Arena Cube timed out, and I had a really bad deck. I think I was already like 2-2. Yeah, I was 2-2 with the deck, so I wasn't going to go anywhere with it, but of course it timed out and I lost the deck and I was like, and I've loved Ikoria draft, probably drafted way too much cycling, but I loved Ikoria draft. But I too am looking forward to M21.
What world is this where Mashi plays Magic? You know, it's kind of wild. You probably play comparable amounts of Magic to me at this point.
You're probably playing a lot more Constructed because of all the deck guides and stuff like that you're doing.
Yeah, I play a lot for all those deck guides. Jeez. I joke, but the deep dives I actually have to play quite a bit because there's just a bunch of stuff you won't learn until you pick up the deck.
Those are the best things. They really, really are. And it's funny, like if I'm just looking for something to read to take a quick break, I've reread those so many times. Just because I think if you're playing Standard, they're just good reads. Luca, okay, fine, don't read that one. But the Team of Wreck is a good one. So, all right, let's talk about this state of the game. Did you get a chance to read the state of the game for Arena that Wizards dropped this week?
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting stuff. They're pushing stuff out. The biggest, of course, is that Arena is now on macOS, though. I will say it's not really on macOS. It's been kind of buggy, and from talking to a lot of folks right now who were really excited about it and switched over to it, you can look at Twitter basically. It's not to the level where I think people are like really happy with it, and it's just a lot of game crashes and stuff. I expect that stuff to get better. That's the stuff that tends to pop up right after a live release, and then you're able to nail it down to fix it. But as of the time we're recording this, it's not made me want to go out and download it for the Mac quite yet. I'll give it a little more time to cook.
So you're just using, what is it, an emulator or something like that where you can run Windows?
Not really. I just am not playing Arena on my Mac. Because
I got you.
Because I was using Parallels, because I can play Magic online via Parallels, but Arena's a beast. It's a chonker, so it actually just doesn't run well enough to play. Which was hoping the native Mac, OS program would actually do that, and I'm sure it will. I just know that like any big release, there's going to be some issues, and I think stability right now is not at the point where I think people are really excited about it.
Wow. Okay. So, and give it time. It is, as you said, it's a beast of a program. They're rolling it out to Mac. I think we're all happy with that. I don't know anything about computer software development or any of that, but I'm like, well, let's see here. It's Mac. That's an OS. That's got to bring us closer to iOS. When can I play it on a tablet?
Yeah. So. I don't know the timeline on that. I mean, that's a lot harder because when you're talking, obviously, it's difficult to get it onto every single platform you want, but there's a huge difference between a tablet or mobile versus a desktop or a laptop, because you just have to make a lot of graphical concessions and how you put, just like the UI just changes completely. So I know that's always a big challenge, and I'm actually really, really interested to see how they solve some of those problems when it does eventually come to mobile, which they've said it will this year.
Yeah, I'm stoked on it. It'd be great to be able to just, pull your phone out or pull your iPad out, particularly in bed, and just play a game of Magic. Ikoria does have a lot of challenges because literally every keyword in the history, it feels like in the history of the game is in that set with counters and crystalline giant, stuff like that. So playing cards like that on your phone when you're trying to figure out who has vigilance, first strike, reach, all that stuff could be a challenge. So we'll see. We'll see, but hopefully they work everything out with Mac and then move on.
It's a big step forward. Magic Online has never, and I don't even know if it's planned to ever have Mac support, and that cuts off a decent segment of the computer population. Obviously, more people use PCs, but it's the sort of thing where even if the start was kind of rocky, it's trending in the right direction.
Oh yeah, and they've made such a massive development that you can't stop halfway, right? And they're more than halfway. They're well more than halfway. So I think everyone should feel good about it. And this kind of increases your faith when they say, hey, we're going to get the mobile stuff out by the end of the year. We're going to be on Mac. The fact that they've taken that first step makes you think, okay, you know what? I think we will be on mobile by the end of the year. So kudos. I know we can be very hard on Wizards, but kudos for getting that done. Some of the other notes that were part of this announcement, it will be cross-platform. So even if you're playing on a Mac, you can still play against people who are playing on a PC. And I think that's important. It's almost, you have to be able to do that, especially with large tournaments and stuff like that.
Yeah, and obviously your collection, your account are the same in between all these platforms. You basically can't do otherwise at this point. I think it's pretty wild. The only time where I actually think it's a question whether you want to do that is for something like Fortnite or a first-person shooter, where it's kind of unfair to have different platforms play against each other. I'm not as well versed in this, of course, as people, but I know playing on an iPad, for example, is a lot harder than playing on a console. So people who play on iPad actually would prefer to play against other people on iPad.
Ooh, I see. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I never thought of it that way, but that's a really good point.
But
I
mean, Magic's not a Twitch game, as in fast Twitch muscles. Doesn't matter. Though it is, of course, a game you can see on Twitch.
A Twitch game, but not a Twitch game. So
let's just say it's an advantage for those of us in our advanced age that it's not a fast reaction game.
It's a game of the mind, everybody. A game of the mind.
And so well that too is decaying, at least at a slower rate.
Some of us didn't really have it to start with anyway. So It does say, you know, it does note there will be some differences, obviously, with commands, and apparently where some things are saved, local gameplay settings, they're saved locally on your machine rather than servers and stuff like that. But I think that's all. Looks to be pretty minor, and just, you know, gold star for getting us on the Mac now to get that second gold star and get it stable so that people can really dive headlong into it. Another part of the announcement was some changes to the Jumpstart experience on Arena. Jumpstart, we talked about this last week, Gabby and I, about it looks like an awesome product, right?
It looks like a product that Magic has needed forever.
Ages. And well, they've tried, right? They tried with Starter and kind of, that's what core sets were about, right? Originally, yeah, the original, but like, late
both Magic and Dungeons and Dragons, coincidentally, both Wizards properties at this point, have been the kind of games that have forever been really, really sticky once you get into them. They really get you, but hard to get into and not something that you can almost ever pick up and just run with. And now they've done a lot better job. I know for D&D, you can just buy a box that has literally everything you need to start from nothing to playing D&D. And Jumpstart, I think, is that product for Magic in a way that the previous versions of this, you know, weren't. And I'm sure you guys talked about that last week. So I'm excited about Jumpstart for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. And it's funny you mentioned that about D&D because I kind of played in a campaign, doesn't really count, years ago when I was in middle school. And there definitely is an intimidation factor. It feels like such an undertaking. So thinking about Magic and the huge history of Magic, the number of cards in Magic and all that stuff, I can see, you know, you need to break that down. So it's a great product. It's a great, great idea. I think we're all looking forward to it. You know, I'm looking forward to it on Arena. I know a lot of people are looking forward to it, the physical cards. But there are changes. And the announcement said that they're swapping some cards out, some of them for power level, and it sounds like some of it may have been just for development lead time. So here is the list of cards that are going out. Chain Lightning, Lightning Bolt, Ball Lightning, Ajani's Chosen, Angelic Arbiter, Draconic Roar, Goblin Lore, Flame Tongue Kavu, Exhume, Fadia's Seer, Mausoleum Turnkey, Path to Exile, Read the Runes, Reanimate, Rhystic Study, Shieldred the Whispering One, Scourge of Nel'Thoth, Scrounging Bandar, Thought Scour, and Time to Feed. Some of these very clearly, like when you look at something like Chain Lightning, Lightning Bolt, Ball Lightning. I don't know, the Ball Lightning, would Ball Lightning be too strong?
No.
In historic?
I don't really know why Ball Lightning's on the list, because there's some cards like Chain Lightning and Lightning Bolt. You look at them and you're like, yeah, they didn't want these in historic. They think these are too good. And then there's cards like Fadia's Seer, which is that's the Sinbad reprint where you like look at the top card of your deck, and if it's a land, put it in your hand. And if not, I think you discard it, or Rhystic Study or Scourge of Nel'Thoth that you're thinking, yeah, this might just be too annoying to program or lead to a bad UI experience. But when there's cards like Ball Lightning, it's like, this isn't too powerful and doesn't seem too complicated. So I don't really know what's up with that.
So Scourge of Nel'Thoth, just for anyone listening, 2BF for a 6/6 flying. You make a zombie dragon. You may cast Scourge of Nel'Thoth from your graveyard by paying 2 black and sacrificing 2 creatures rather than paying its mana cost. Is that just too OP, too easy to speed out quickly?
I assume that, again, that doesn't look like a power level concern to me, but I don't know. Some of these are kind of random. Like, I could see Mausoleum Turnkey. That's like a weird weird template where it like will return a creature at random from your graveyard to your hand. But I don't really know.
It's your opponent's choice. 1 black, 3 other for 3/2 Ogre Rogue. When Mausoleum Turnkey enters the battlefield, return target creature card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand. So maybe, I don't know. The reason I have these cards is because I was looking at them thinking, which of these do I think were design issues? Like FTK, is that just too powerful for historic?
Yeah, FTK, it would just dominate the format, I'm sure. Or yeah, I mean, even if it didn't dominate the format, it would at least lead to it being too much about FTK. It would push out a lot of the mid-range decks.
Is it? Wow. Is Flame Tongue Kavu really that good at this point? I haven't played historic. So, you know, full disclosure, I have not played historic. So I am not in a place to say.
I mean, I haven't either. Flame Tongue Kavu is just a historically very powerful card that also, again, when Flame Tongue Kavu is legal, cards that have creatures with 4 or less toughness basically become not legal. Like, you can't put cool creatures in your deck that just get eaten by Flame Tongue, or you'll just get eaten by Flame Tongue.
Right. I mean, so Flame Tongue Kavu, 4 mana. I don't have it in front of me. 4 mana for a 4/2 beast or lizard. I'm not sure. When she comes into play, she deals 4 damage target creature. 4 mana is, not, I mean, that's a pretty hefty price, isn't it? I don't know. I mean, I think it's powerful. Historically, it was insane. It was the best creature in its format. So and there's other things like Draconic Roar doesn't feel too crazy. One red, one other for an instant. As an additional cost to cast Draconic Roar, you may reveal a dragon card from your hand. Draconic Roar deals 3 damage to target creature. If you reveal the dragon card or control a dragon as you cast Draconic Roar, Draconic Roar deals 3 damage to that creature's controller.
Yeah, I mean, that card, again, I assume that's a UI thing more than it is like a power level thing. Whereas like something like Exhume, of course, is and Reanimator are again
Reanimate, power level. Yeah. Yeah. Path to Exile. Like there's so close. Yeah. So this begs a whole other question. This is kind of the game designer side, Luis. If these cards are too powerful for Historic, why are they good in an intro, like get to know the game?
I think that the Jumpstart, so I haven't played with Jumpstart, so obviously I don't know how it plays out yet, but
sure.
Jumpstart, one thing that I think people sometimes conflate is that intro products need to be really, really simple and not too powerful. And that's not true. They just need to be fun. Like if they're fun, that's all that really matters. You're trying to sell the game. You're trying to give someone a reason to play again. And power level, I don't think is actually like a huge concern when it comes to Jumpstart. Like, yeah, maybe like assuming that the format is overall balanced where it's not like, oh, you got the Reanimator deck again, I can't win. Assuming that's not the case, it's okay if some of the stuff that's going on is pretty powerful. Like Lightning Bolt's a great card to show off in Jumpstart because it's powerful, simple, and fun. You know, Reanimate's an interesting card because it'll teach you that life loss, hey, is not always a bad thing. Like, a lot of newer players, when they look at drawback cards, historically, they've not liked them. Like, I don't know, you remember Juzam Jin got a bad rap because it dealt damage to you every turn, you know, and that ended up being, well, for the time, one of the best creatures available. Reanimate is the kind of card, it's, you know, one black, put a creature into play, and then lose life equal to its casting cost. Really powerful card. I think a lot of players will look at this and be like, why do I want to lose 5 life? Isn't that terrible? You start at 20 and you're trying to get to 0. That's how you lose. Or, you know, if you get to 0. So teaching them that, hey, Reanimate can actually be really good because it jumps you ahead in terms of development. You can have a 5 or 6 mana card out on turn 3. And that will help, I think, teach those things while being a potentially very fun card. So I'm not really, like I said, I don't really think power level is an issue. It's more really how fun is a card.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Some of it, do you think any of it is challenging? Because I think exactly what you say about Reanimate is tough. Like Ball Lightning can be a little bit tough because, you know, it's got the trample. That's something you got to learn. The sacrifice at end of turn can feel bad. Mausoleum Turnkey, that does not feel like a beginner card.
No, you know, and I don't, as long, again, it's a balance. Like Portal, I think, partially failed because Portal decks are boring. No one wants to play with a bunch of 2/2s and 3/3s and 4/4s and 5 mana kill a creature and 3 mana bounce a creature. Like, that's not, there's not, there weren't cards that were in, they took instants out. They took a lot of what made Magic fun away. And that, it, again, it wasn't just, you know, reduce the complexity and people will come. You can't take away the intrinsic fun of Magic and a lot of the core gameplay. People are in for complexity if they're kind of eased into it. And If the top 5% of complexity cards in Jumpstart are pretty complex, as long as the other 95% can carry them, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. It is. I mean, what you've said is true. Like Goblin Lore, Read the Runes. Some of these are pretty advanced cards that, you know, you're gonna have to like Read the Runes. I could see being pretty tough. I mean, it's a tough card to play even now. You're like, what do I want to sack to draw more from and stuff like that. So there was also an update to the Brawler's Guild Hall, Luis. How much Brawl have you played?
I played a little bit. Actually, I played a bunch when Brawl was legal back on Magic Online, which was kind of nonsense. But I haven't played it on Arena.
I haven't played any of it. And I actually had to, I was in a meeting with Dennis and Jeffrey. I was like, okay, guys, I got to look up what Brawl is because I don't know any of the rules to Brawl. So I know there was a huge thing where this was Wednesdays only and people were unhappy with it. So I'm super happy that they've changed it to being like all the time.
Yeah.
All day.
I think that's true. Brawl was just a fun game mode and a lot of people wanted to play it. It also made it so a lot of the people who drafted and had a bunch of cards weren't, if they didn't want to full on play standard, they wouldn't have a good outlet. So having Brawl be legal is great.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's awesome, and it didn't. The state of the game, it says, hey, we had some concerns. We were worried about like making this evergreen, doing it always. But enough people have played. We've stress tested it enough. We'll do it always. And I think that's awesome. And they're also going to have some historic brawl too, right? They're bringing in some historic brawl so that people can play with their older stuff too, because the rules of brawl are, you know, standard. It's basically kind of standard only commander, 60 card deck, and Highlander.
Yeah, all one ofs, yeah.
Deck builder improvements. I don't know how huge a lot of that is, because this, like, there's a note here. Did you know that the in-game search function supports advanced searching terms? Yeah, I knew that. That's not really an improvement, right? That's been a thing for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what I don't use the deck builder all that much on Arena, so I guess I couldn't say. But I wasn't aware of that, so I guess knowing about that now means an improvement. I'm not sure.
I mean, it is. It's weird because I mean, I don't know. I kind of intuitively found it, so I don't think it's that difficult. But I guess if it was hidden and you didn't know about it, you absolutely should use it. It's great. Like, I was tinkering around with this Simic Flash deck that Huey wrote about on TFP Pro. The one, yeah, he credits you. He says you built it. And I have questions. We'll get to that after this. But one of the things I did is that you can go into Arena, you know, click on cards owned, cards unowned, because if you don't do that, it'll just default to only cards you own, and then look up every card with Flash, which is like invaluable when you're trying to look at a deck like that. What are my other options? Let me see what every card with Flash is in the current standard. You can make it historic. You can make it standard only. You can do just one set. So yeah, if you're not using advanced search on Arena and you're playing constructed, you really should.
I'm not going to lie. Magic Online gets a lot of crap, and for good reason, but Magic Online has a very robust deck builder. I think that Magic Online, basically, if I could have the gameplay part of Arena and all the non-gameplay parts of Magic Online and combine them, I think that would be much, much better. Because I think Magic Online's like searching. I think how you just like you can move cards around in Deck Builder. How it's all just like this, like they, you know, this very like logical and easy to use, robust platform with, of course, a game that looks more like an Excel spreadsheet than you'd want. That's why Arena's gameplay is, I think, vastly superior. But Magic Online does, it does give you the, like, cause Magic's a heavy game. Magic's not, you know, Magic isn't a game that you can just kind of point and click and just scroll flick. It's not that kind of game. Having a Magic Online, like the spreadsheet part of Magic Online actually is useful sometimes.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the draft experience? Have you drafted a ton on Arena? Or
yeah, now once they added human drafts, I switched over to Arena. I do some drafts on Magic Online because I find the competition on Magic Online is very strong, mm-hmm. And Arena is as well. Once you get up to like the higher ranked levels, but
yeah,
I kind of fall into this like trap where I don't draft enough on Arena to get out of the lower levels, which means that if I want to practice for an event, like a pro tour, back when they had draft pro tours, hopefully that'll be again, I would draft on Magic Online, because at this point, the only people drafting current sets on Magic Online are the real, like, diehards. Like,
oh, they're diehards.
Yeah, these are the people who refuse to, these are the people, you know, who, cell phones, I use a telegraph, you know, and I'm one of those people to a degree, but the draft video I did for Channel Fireball today was on Arena, and in general, I find the draft experience in Arena to be quite good. Like, I think that it's awesome.
I think it's great. I do get frustrated sometimes, because you can always look at the table and you see that one person who's got four or five packs.
Sure.
Up.
I'm not sure why that was implemented, because all that means does is let you get annoyed at the person with all the packs. But
exactly.
But you know, that is how it works.
I agree. I was just going to say, I was like, I don't think I should have that function, because now I'll make my pick and I don't even wait. I'm like, okay, let's see what's going on. Let's see what's going on at the table. And it's either a new player or someone streaming, which I respect. Like, right. You know, like if you're going to stream, do that, make your money. That's totally fine. I don't mind any of that, but I've been a big fan of the draft experience now, especially now that you can do human drafts. Like the bot drafts were, and they were fun, but they were like a different kind of game.
Bot drafts didn't do it for me. Human drafts are great.
Yeah. Human drafts are completely awesome. But yeah, the deck builder improvements are great. Use that advanced search function. Can't recommend it enough. All right. Let's talk about Amonkhet Remastered. I don't think there's a ton of information on this. We know that Amonkhet Remastered is coming. And here's what we know. Oh, hey, did this get your attention? We hope so. While strictly speaking, this has absolutely nothing to do with rotation, since we're talking timelines, we figure we might as well slip this in. Amonkhet Remastered will be arriving in August, adding an additional 300 plus cards to Historic.
So this is actually pretty big news to kind of slip in as like a line item here, because Historic, first of all, Historic is going to get more and more support as time goes on. The Pro Tour Finals is Historic. You know, that's one of the formats. We're going to see other high-level tournaments playing Historic. And as such, adding a whole set or a whole pair of sets to Historic is huge. I mean, that's going to change the metagame quite a bit. It's funny because Historic's like in this spot where like a lot of people play it and enjoy it. But what the like metagame is going to look like, it's very unformed. It's kind of like the way I will see it is when you take a format that hasn't been played in a highly competitive setting, and then you put it in that setting, it's like putting a piece of metal on an anvil and have a bunch of people walk over and start hitting it with hammers, right? Like,
yeah.
Though I guess blacksmiths don't work with multiple people. That doesn't really make sense. But it's like the format really doesn't coalesce and get, as you know, get to the sharp edge, get strong until you have people with incentives to really try to break it. And we saw that many, many years ago at this point with Legacy, which wasn't, you know, got before it had been played at Grand Prix, looked a lot different afterwards. We see it when Modern, you know, kind of went through the crucible of getting played as a Pro Tour format. And it's not to say that the format's not real till the pros get to it. It's more like formats look very different once you add a couple thousand people who now are trying their best to break it. Of course, the format's going to look different. It's going to look like what it would look like if people are trying their best to push the limits. Whereas before that, what will end up happening is you have a lot of people who are playing the decks they like. Nothing wrong with that. But it becomes different once you put money on the line.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. Once you put that prize at it, it changes everything. It's not about just honing your land destruction deck because you love playing land destruction. It's about what is going to get me, the brass ring. That's what I'm really trying to do. And I think it's just having that goal to focus on collectively as a community, especially with the best Magic players in the world, is super important. And you're right. It does hone that chunk of metal right into a blade. So I think that's important. Why? So Amonkhet Remastered, is this going to be a combination of Amonkhet and Hour, or are they just redoing?
If they said 300 cards, it has to be both, right?
So what? But why do that? Like, don't we want to draft Amonkhet and Hour? Like, why can't? Can we bring those back and do that stuff?
I don't know if it's going to be a draftable format.
I just feel like it should be. Like, why not just bring?
Tempest Remastered was a Magic Online product where they took Tempest Stronghold Exodus, cut some cards, packaged them also and made packs where they had all cards from all three sets and it was draftable.
And that's right.
And I believe it flopped. I did not have strong numbers. So that's not to say that this would, because Amonkhet's a lot more recent and we're talking 4 years instead of 20 years. But I that has to give you pause when you're looking at like, hey, should we put a lot of investment into this? Maybe make this a draft format versus, hey, let's just let people play a lot of historic cards. Cause we also know, cause from the arena pre-alpha before it was public, Amonkhet cards were on there.
Yeah.
Like that.
So we know that's in there.
That was the first thing. Beta. So yeah. That's old enough now that I'm sure they had to spend a lot of time making sure everything works and adding all the cards they didn't get to or whatever. We know that they have a head start. I can't imagine that's worth nothing to begin with.
Oh, I agree. But I'm saying, why do Amonkhet Remastered? Why not just release Amonkhet an Hour and then have Amonkhet draft, you know, like you could just have it as the actual
draft. I would have to know more about what the goals of this are
to say
why they would do or not do a specific thing.
How was that format? I didn't draft any.
So you would have liked Triple Amonkhet more than Amonkhet plus Hour. Triple Amonkhet was insanely aggressive. All beat down decks. All you do is curve out. One drops are good. Two drops are good. Exert made it. So it was just all about pressure. Yeah, you had cards like Gust Walker, you know, that really, Exert really was a beating. And then once Hour came out, then it became a format I liked a lot more because it added cycling lands, it had a good mana ramp, it added a good attrition cards, and the format became very different. But I think as a whole, it was successful because going from really aggressive to fairly controlish, more wide open, is cool to have both sides of that coin. Of course, they don't do double set drafts anymore, which I actually think is good. I've thought that the quality of limited formats has uniformly gone up as you just have triple Ikoria, not Ikoria, Ikoria plus Ikoria to, you know, whatever it is.
Right, right. I was going to ask you that. So you prefer the single versus the double set or triple set drafts?
Yeah, it just supports the themes better. It, like, what it used to happen is, you know, you have a triple set, right? A triple of one of the base set. If themes mm-hmm. were well supported, all's good. Then the second set gets added, and sometimes it has, you know, carryover, right? Affinity for artifacts was in both Mirrodin and Darksteel. But the new, the invariable new themes that were added in set two, because otherwise why would you have it? The set has to have new themes, otherwise it doesn't stand on its own, weren't supported enough because you only had one pack of Darksteel and two packs of Mirrodin. And so it's like, oh, okay, it's kind of hard to get these to work. And then once you mm-hmm. add three sets to it, it just was just kind of a mess. And I think it's much stronger to just have three of the same pack for every draft format. I have, especially when you go back and historically look before they even did this, what were the strongest draft formats? And triple cons was stronger than, you know, cons Fate Reforged.
Yeah. 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 I think for the most part, I am a huge fan of the triple sets, you know, and even historically with maybe OLS being the main exception, I would draft a lot more when the first set came out, like triple masks or, you know, something like that. And then less and less so as the other sets came out, just because it just wasn't as fun for me. It was, you know, there's this you have to learn, kind of relearn what to do. It changes everything. But yeah, I'm a big fan of it. I wasn't sure you were. I'm glad to hear I'm not completely off base here. So I agree with you completely. Those are the main hits from the June state of the game. Did you have any other final thoughts on that June state of the game, Luis?
No, I mean, this is overall good. Like I said, there has been some criticism of the Mac build just because it just has been rough. And honestly, arena stability as a whole has taken a bit of a hit here. I've just seen a lot of people kind of echoing that. But that's the sort of stuff that, you know, those problems get fixed. They're at the top of the heap. When your program doesn't work, people, you know, you'll throw bodies at it until it does. The fixes that are like kind of more annoying in a sense are when there's small quality of life things that are just low enough priority. They just like float in the middle of the queue basically forever because higher priority stuff gets piled on top. But stuff like game crashes, like they're just going to have to fix that. And I don't know, Marina's too important for them not to do that.
So this is great. This dovetails right into the next thing I want to talk about, which is we had the Players Tour. And one of the things that did come out is there were some server issues. They were not the result of anything on the player side. Sometimes they could be, but there were server issues which caused problems with people would disconnect. And basically, if you disconnected, if you lost your connection, that was a game loss. You got a game loss there. What do you think about the Players Tour? You can start with just that one point, how they handle that. Just the Players Tour in general, having the now that all four of those online Players Tours are past us.
So, well, there were certainly issues, and some people got, like, I saw one of the accounts of a player where he was basically winning the game and they got forced to restart because of a server issue and ended up losing the match and, you know, didn't make top eight. And, you know, that's the sort of stuff that really, really is frustrating as a player. It's like when in Paper Magic, when a judge gives you the wrong ruling and you lose because of it, there's nothing they can say that will make you feel better. And I've seen this happen before, and it's just it's just crushing. It happened to Shahar, you know,
very famously, yeah.
Grand Prix Denver, actually, right here in Denver. Yep. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the sort of thing that like that's an exit opportunity for some people because it's like, why am I trying so hard and having this happen? And I understand that frustration, and I think that Magic Arena does have a ways to go before I would want to play for $250,000 on it, or you know, these high stakes things. And it's not to say that the Players Tours now don't have any stakes. They definitely do. There's real money on the line. There's invitations on the line. There's a lot. But I think that given the state of the program and the state of Reconnects is above the bar, I believe you would need to run these tournaments on there. Yes, it sucks when this happens to people. And my inclination would be to be almost overly generous to try to fix them. Like, for example, if someone's playing for a qualification and gets disconnected and loses, maybe they also get qualified as well as their opponent. You can't add a ninth person to a top eight, but you can say, hey, we're going to actually invite you to this next thing because, you know, to make up for this error. And you know what? That's, I think, the price you should be willing to pay if you're having people play on a platform that has these issues. You know, and that said, it ran very smoothly for me. I didn't run into any issues. I played all 15 rounds. I I enjoyed it quite a bit. I actually got to do something at this players tour that I'd always wanted to do. It was actually two things. One, it was publish my deck list before the, you know, before the players tour.
Sure, of course. And it was submitted and it was public, so there's no reason not to.
And I wrote an article, here's what I'm playing and why, and I published that on like Wednesday, and then I in the CFB Pro Discord, because it was a pro article, I updated the night before, like, hey, I actually changed a couple cards, here's what I'm going to submit. So everyone there could have just played the exact same deck list, and in fact, I lost to someone playing the same 75 as me. You
nice,
know?
Nice. They'd made the changes that you...
Oh, yeah. And I talked to them afterwards. We were messaging on Discord and they're like, yeah, you know, like I got CFP Pro and I was really happy to see that you posted your deck list and I played it. You know, I'm sorry I beat you. I'm like, no, it's totally fine. Like,
that's awesome. Yeah.
I think that's cool. I've always been hesitant to do that in the past. I just couldn't do it because when you work with a team, it's not fair. Like, you know, if me and seven other people were testing a deck, it's not fair of me to reveal what they're playing. And mm-hmm. and in this particular case, I basically worked on my own. I mean, I talked to other people, but I can't speak for every team, but most of the teams I knew took a pretty relaxed approach to this one just because we're not playing for like future points and you know, the rivals and people in MPL are kind of locked in at the moment.
Would you have felt differently if you were on that Yorion Rats deck though? Because that was kind of an unknown. Like, would you have published that one?
That is different. That I would have had to think about it. I was playing, you know, I played Team Wreck, and while I think the list I played was good, I don't think it was drastically different from what was going on. But if I had tech for Team Wreck, I would have still published it. I felt pretty committed to doing that. If I had a completely new deck, yeah, maybe I would have felt differently. That's a good point. Also got to stream the Pro Tour, and I thought that was really awesome. Cool. That was really fun. I put a 2-minute delay on because, you know, and I really like this, by the way. Here's an aside. The rules were you couldn't get help from chat or outside sources, and ghosting was explicitly illegal. I don't believe I got ghosted. I don't think any of my opponents did that. But, you know, for the longest time, I would hear people, you know, Wizards say, hey, we can't really make ghosting illegal because we have no way to enforce that. But you know what? I actually think rules like that are still good because there are a lot of people who, if you say, hey, ghosting's against the rules, they just won't ghost. They're not. It's not even about getting caught. It's about the fact that they don't want to break the rules. So just saying it's against the rules is step one. Step two, it can help cut off the more egregious cases where you find out when someone ghosts, or maybe someone, you know, like there are people who could report, you know, if they knew their friend was ghosting and they really didn't like it. And I think in general, it would just cut off a lot of the cases. So I didn't feel like I put myself at a big disadvantage by streaming it. And I thought it was a cool experience. I liked that I got to stream my Pro Tour, and you know, I ended up going 8-7. Obviously, I would have liked to do better, but I enjoyed getting to play that and do like publish my deck list and then stream it and just have the whole thing be like almost a community event. Like I got to see a lot of people come and hang out and stream and do all that. And I actually think next time I might do what Mengucci did, which was really smart. He streamed no delay, but during his PT matches would be a mode only mode, so he couldn't get advice from chat. He'd still talk through all his plays. I actually watched a bunch of his stream. And then as soon as the match was done, he could turn off the emote-only mode.
Emote-only.
So it meant that he got to have the real-time communication with chat during downtime, which is awesome because you could talk about your match and whatever else you want. And then during a match, it's not like you really want to pay attention to chat anyway.
Yeah, no, I think it's exciting. I think it's awesome. There's a lot of voyeurism involved with like getting to be on that ride along with your favorite pro during the Pro Tour, and I think that is something that's just amazing.
I mean,
that modern technology does.
You remember Google Glasses or Google Glass?
Yes,
the short-lived product. One point, I was talking to someone from Google, and we were seeing like they're like, maybe I can get you a pair, and you can wear it to like a tournament, like. I'd be able to like wear this so I could broadcast or record my entire tournament. It never ended up coming to fruition, but this is that, you know, with commentary actually.
Yeah. It's even better. I get you get to talk to through exactly what you're doing.
I mean, they got to see me agonize about my decisions and in some cases make the wrong ones, in some cases make the right ones, and it was really close, or put my head in my hands like, don't have the dispute, and then they did or didn't, and it was fun. I don't know. I enjoyed it. It made the event a lot more fun for me, even though this event wasn't the highest stakes tournament I've ever played. Again, because of just the circumstances where they're not tying this to future league standing. Obviously, if you add mythic points to this, and that can determine whether you're going to be in Rivals or MPL, that increases the stakes by a tremendous amount.
Where are you at right now with playing Standard? And like, do you think you're at the top of your game or near the top of your game right now? You're playing enough to be there?
I'm not too far off. Like, I'm not at the top of my game. I'm not playing 40 hours of Magic a week, or 50 hours of Magic a week, or 60 hours of Magic a week. Yeah. You know, all numbers which I have played in the past. But I'm playing a fair amount, and I feel like I'm pulled in a couple different directions, as I have been for a long time, right? In terms of like, well, I need to make content, so I'm going to play maybe some decks I wouldn't normally play, or I want to like, oh, I'll record a Modern video today, or I want to do an article about Draft. And then, of course, you know, the aspects of my job that are not literally making content, you know, kind of pull me away from playing tons of Magic. And then, just like anyone else, especially, you know, as you get older, you just have more responsibilities. They tend to pile up. So, I wouldn't say I'm at the hungriest, where, you know, and I was like, when me and Chian were living together in our 20s and playing 50 hours of Magic Online a week or whatever, I'm not there. But I'm also playing enough, and I actually kind of credit this to CFP Pro, funnily enough, because of the deep dive, because I want to really get this good information. I'm playing more Magic than I was, say, a year ago.
Yeah, that was my sense of it. I think you seem to be playing a lot more these days. And that's good. That's good for all of us. Good for fans of Luis, and good for any of us on CFP Pro who want to read those articles, because I think it you can tell when you're really, really in the groove there. Would you, final question on the PT here, would you run it back with the same 75?
No, if I had played, so I played Teemer Wreck with, you know, 4 Shark Typhoons, of course, Night Pack Ambushers, and in the side. I liked all that, but I would have played more Brazen Borrowers. And you saw kind of the lists the next week, because they were split over two weekends, uniformly kind of adopt more copies of Brazen Borrower, which I thought was a very well-positioned card, because it can bounce a Shark Typhoon and exchange kind of evenly, because they get a card, but you also get to cast your 3-1, which is decent. It can actually bounce Night Pack Ambusher or Wilderness Wreck, and it just plays really well in the Flash style matchups, which is where these matchups came down to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think Martin had a similar take on the Monday meta, where he was discussing how important he thought Brazen Borrower was in Teemer right now. So, all right. Any final thoughts on the Players Tour?
I'm excited to play more big online tournaments. I really am. Mm-hmm. Like, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. Like, I didn't know how I was going to feel about it going into it, because, again, it was very different from what we had played before. It wasn't the highest stakes, but it was definitely not zero stakes. And overall, it didn't feel the same as a Pro Tour. Like, in terms of the night before, I didn't have a bunch of adrenaline. You know, I didn't wake up in the morning super excited to the same degree. But as I went through the tournament, I was like, wow, this is a lot of fun. I really care about this. So I would say, you know, if a 1 is playing a ranked match of Arena for literally zero stakes, and a 10 is playing the World Championships, and a normal Pro Tour is like a 9, this was like a 7. And that's really good. Yeah. No, yeah. I unequivocally had a great time, and I'm looking forward to more of these.
I know Huey at one point messaged us on Slack, and he's like, oh, I'm between rounds, I'm going to jump in the shower. And just thinking about, like, wait a minute. Yeah, he just finished one round. He's got plenty of time, and he's going to go take a shower now at his own house and then come back and play the next round of the Players Tour. That's just awesome.
Yeah. I also want to talk a little bit about the, like, whole, is this a Pro Tour or not discussion when it comes to, like, accomplishments. And I want to make it really clear that, like, I don't view this as a Pro Tour in terms of, like, how it makes me feel or what I think about as a Pro Tour, but as an accomplishment, I think it should stand on its own. Like, it is a very high accomplishment. And in fact, I think the first half decade of Pro Tours I played at were much easier than this. like when I used to play from 2003 to around 2008-09, you would play against like 30% of the people you'd play against just didn't know what was going on. They would, if it was constructed, they'd have a bad deck. If it was limited, they would draft bad cards. Like, it's not to take away from the accomplishments of people who did well at those Pro Tours, myself included, but when you just look at the competition level, it's gone way up these days. So top 8ing one of these tournaments is harder than top 8ing most of the Pro Tours in existence. Not all of them. I think modern era Pro Tours end up having everyone from around the world who's good in the same building, you know, like, not everyone, but, you know, it's more international than these, which are split up among 4 tournaments. But I still think that I think that that's kind of a nonsense argument if you're trying to detract from anyone's accomplishments, because I really don't want to do that. That's not how I view this. I think that they're different things in terms of, like, again, what you feel about them and what the experience is going to a live Pro Tour is, of course, different than playing an online tournament. But anyone who did well at these should be rightfully very proud of themselves.
Oh, I completely agree. And I think a lot of that has to do with the old dogs like you and I clinging too much to the kind of like that intangible value of the Pro Tour.
Part of the Pro Tour is I go get to see Shahar and Alex Hain and Pat Cox and Paulo and all these people. And we get to go out to dinner after day one and stuff that's just not present in an online tournament. Mm-hmm. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the limited constructed split makes it feel different too. It all just feels different.
But, yeah.
You know, at the end of it, you have Marshall announcing the top eight and you're just like listening and you have people cheering and it's a different vibe. It's not the same mm-hmm. thing. And I think it would do a disservice to both tournaments to try to say they're just the same thing, but one's online. But in terms of like, does this work for a pedigree? Yeah, of course this is a great accomplishment. It's, I believe, on par with that.
Oh, completely. I mean, and I think one of the things you said, I think, is so true, which is you go look at some of these early Pro Tours, and we don't even have to go back to like 96. We can get way more recent into the aughts where the accessibility that being able to play online, and yes, it's split across four tournaments, but the accessibility for players, the best players in the world, wherever they are, as long as they have an internet connection, to play in this event, I think naturally means you have so many more high level players engaged. So absolutely, it's an accomplishment on par and probably better than some of your earlier Pro Tours. Like,
I mean, every single person I played against was very good. Like, I didn't play against any gimme rounds. Whereas at the old PTs, you'd every now and then have one of those.
Yeah. So congratulations to everyone who did well at these players tours. And I am looking forward to it. I think most people I've talked to who've played in them, who actually did participate, really, really looking forward to the next one. So I think it's good. It's good high level competition. That's one of the things that I've heard a lot. I listened to the Midweek Metagame, Nassif's podcast. And he was talking about
how you start the week with the Monday metagame. And then middle of the week, you got the midweek metagame.
The midweek metagame. I literally do. I think it's great. The midweek metagame is great. For those of you who haven't listened to it, you should give it a listen. I think it's a really, really fun podcast. And they do a lot more than standard. They do standard, modern, pioneer, and stuff like that. And Nassif is obviously just a stone cold master. Like, as he demonstrated, top fouring. I think he top four with his own deck and then lost to the mirror match. So he lost to his own deck or something. So, he was talking about his feeling of competition. Of course, Nassif has played in his fair share of extremely high stakes events, pro tours and worlds and everything. And he thought that the level of competition was like legit, just completely.
Of course,
legit.
He did well in the tournament. Yeah. So of course you think
that's exactly what his co-host said. If you had flamed out, you would have thought it was a joke. But because you did so well, of course that's right. No, but Nassif, as we know, is like one of the most honest guys.
He led to one of the better moments that really shows me that there are differences between this and the Pro Tour, because he actually timed out or was about to time out in the Players Tour, which is something that I wish could happen in a Pro Tour, but sadly the rules of Paper Magic really do not give you the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it was interesting. He talks about that, and you could tell that a lot of people were like, here it comes, Nassif's gonna die. For those who don't know, Nassif is a notoriously slow player, and that's coming from me. I also am a notoriously slow player. Oh yeah. And I always feel bad for him, because I know he doesn't like that rap, and I think everybody loves Nassif. I don't know anyone.
No, Nassif's great. He's both a great player and a great person, but he does play too slow. He is slow.
It's a fact. I agree. And it's just funny. He's just like, oh, I just feel like I'm deliberate. I'm like, you're deliberately slow, Gabe. Like, come on.
I don't even know if he's deliberately slow. He just is slow.
Yeah, he doesn't. And I think part of it is he really is kind of going back and forth. It's so weird to me, because I've been so exposed to you. When you watch Luis play Magic, and all of you should, you just feel like it's so effortless. Like, he sees the right answer immediately. And then sometimes it doesn't work out and he goes, oh, that was wrong. But you deliver it with such confidence and so much vigor and speed that it's like, of course it's the right answer. Nassif's on the other end of that, where he really, I think, does like agonize over every decision.
He hems and haws about where to play, which temple to play on turn one.
Yeah. And so it's just like, it's so different, because my experience knowing you and growing up around you is like, oh, all the top Magic players, they just see the right play immediately, and that's how they play Magic. And that's just not true, because Nassif is in my top five all time. So, like, you know, the fact that he doesn't do that shows you something. So, all right, Luis, we have a new set. It's a base set or core set. I guess we don't say base set anymore. It's a core set. Core 2021 is out right now on Arena. Pre-order on Channel Fireball. I can't get the physical cards yet, although it's a pre-release weekend. And so, like, if you're in the neighborhood, come by the CFP Game Center. I think we have pre-release packs. You can't play there, but you can pick up your pre-release packs. quick first impressions. I know that the LR on this is already out, and both constructed, the constructed deck guide and a limited deck guide from Luis available now on CFB Pro. But any quick first impressions on M21 for you?
It feels like there's a decent amount of synergy. It is a core set, so like when you're talking about draft, there it's going to be a little bit it's going to be a little bit less complicated than most of your normal expert level expansions. But in general, I found from doing now five drafts or so that synergy is a real thing, and you can draft these kind of nice synergistic decks. And it's kind of like fundamentals of Magic gameplay. It's part of what I like about core sets, where making good attacks and blocks, conserving your removal, not wasting it too early. The format's not excessively fast, but there's definitely beatdown decks. It's nice. It's balanced, which is, you know, kind of what core sets tend to be like. It's kind of middle of the road.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it. What are some cards? Any? I have not. So I'll confess, I've read your limited review. I've not read the constructed review. So any predictions for high impact cards? Cards that you think are going to really make their mark on standard, or maybe even kind of make certain other decks and strategies redundant and move them out?
Well, I think Rewind is actually one of the early cards that looks to me to be very strong, mostly because Nightpack Ambusher exists. The curve of, well, turn three if you have a growth spot, but even just turn four, rewinding their four drop or five drop if they were on the play, and then untapping four lands and playing a Nightpack Ambusher, like that's just disgusting.
It's a blowout.
It's gross. That's a blowout. What,
like, it's filthy.
Imagine they're like play a Nissa, and you're like, okay, rewind it, play Ambusher. Now you got an Ambusher in play. You hit him for four, and then pass, make a wolf, and then have another counterspell in your hand. Also, Spectral Sailor rewind is nice, because even if you got nothing better to do, you can just draw a card off Spectral Sailor. So it turns rewind into dismiss, which is also a very strong card. And so I definitely like that as a strong strategy. I don't know if it'll be fun to play against. Rewind's a kind of annoying card to lose to, but it is very strong. I've seen some rumors about Teferi being good. I actually didn't think Teferi looked very good to me, but people seem to be happy with it because it helps really get the like draw two strategy going. So you have a Jolrael Monvuli Empress. She makes a 2/2 cat whenever you draw your second card for the
second
turn.
Card.
So you're like, turn two, Jolrael, turn four, Teferi, plus one, make a cat. On their turn, -3 against their biggest thing to phase it out. On your turn, make another cat, and all of a sudden, you're just really far ahead on board. So definitely see those two blue cards actually kind of doing some work. I also like the idea of Gadarak. So that's a 2 and a red for a 5/4 flyer.
Oh, yes.
Can't attack unless you have four artifacts. And at the end of your turn, you get a treasure token for each non-token creature that died this turn. And where this fits really nicely is in the Cat Oven decks, because first of all, Witch's Oven and food are artifacts, which means that he's more likely to get to attack. Second, if you play Gadarak, sack a cat to an oven, sack another cat to an oven, you know, have to bring it back, you get two treasure tokens end of turn, which sack for a mana, and you can really just go off. You now get to like turn four, let's say play a Bolas of Citadel or something expensive. Turn four, play two spells in the same turn, and it's a powerful effect that I think is going to end up making those decks get a little bit more combo-y and stronger.
He reminds me, he's kind of like a modern Covetous Dragon. That's what I keep thinking. Yeah. It's the new Covetous Dragon, Gadarak. So do you think that this is going to have a huge impact on Standard though? I mean, like,
no.
You haven't mentioned Marek at all. Like, is Team Marek still queen of the hill, if you will?
Team Marek is still quite good. So I think it's good that M21 is lower power level, because the last couple sets have been too strong. Like, obviously, Ikoria brought us Companions, which were just so far beyond the pale that needed to get seriously nerfed, which I'm glad they did. Throne of Eldraine has Oko, Once Upon a Time, Fires of Invention. So it's got, what, three cards banned from Throne at this point? Is that it?
Yes, I'm trying to think.
Because Agent of Treachery was the last core set. But,
yeah,
you know, we don't need more Throne of Eldraine level power level sets. We need more M21 power level sets. So the problem is there's a bit of a pain point when a new set comes out and is lower power level, and it doesn't have as big of an impact as you'd like. That's how power creep happens. You just have to keep upping the ante. But I like M21. I really do like core sets. I think this is a good core set. I think there's a lot of interesting cards in it. And maybe it's not going to like table flip standard, but I think that's for the best. I'd be scared of what table flip standard. A set that could do that just means it's introducing other broken stuff. It's like The Simpsons where they, that, you know, it's like we release the bees to kill all the snakes.
Oh, yeah.
And then we release the gorillas to catch all the bees and then release the sharks to eat all the gorillas or whatever.
Yeah.
And
it just keeps going.
Yeah. Right? It's an escalation, but I think we're going to find some nice hidden gems in here. I think M21 is going to have some cards that make an impact. And, you know, if more sets come out at this power level, eventually we're going to get to a better place than just, you know, a set dominated by cards like Wilderness Reclamation and Teferi. Like, War of the Spark cannot leave soon enough. Let's just get that Nissa, Narset, Teferi. Just get them all out of here.
I'm with you.
I mean, Ikoria is going to be, and Throne of Eldraine are going to be alongside M21 for its entire existence in Standard. But at the very least, we are going to get War of the Spark out. That will eventually rotate.
Yes, I think, and I think a lot of us are looking forward to it. I will say there are two deck lists on the CFP Pro in the deck vault right now incorporating M21 stuff. There's more of it coming, but have you had a chance to look at Mengu? Mengu had a blue-red spells standard deck. I don't know if you saw this thing. It had like Sea Dasher Octopus, Dreadhorde Arcanist, Sprite Dragon, Stonecoil Serpent, Stormwing Entity. You run things like Light Up the Stage, and you're trying to get some value out of See the Truth. That's what, you know,
Light Up the Stage. Yeah, using the Dreadhorde Arcanist plus See the Truth to draw three cards. Yeah. You have to pump it up with the Sea Dasher Octopus or what have you.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of that's really, really cool. Infuriate, which is just like, wow, Opt. Bunch of like that. Just an aggro. It's funny because I was playing a ton of cycling. I still have it, you know, built on. And so that felt like a draft deck that turned into a constructed deck. This feels like blue red spells, you know, also you could draft on Aquaria, turned into a constructed deck as well. I don't know if you've probably have not had a chance to play this, but maybe if you looked at it, any thoughts on this blue red spells deck?
No, I do like decks like that. I mean, I took Arclight Phoenix deck to a Pro Tour when it got zero cards from the new set. So I definitely like know my way around a blue red spells deck.
Yeah. Well, the other one is the Huey one, which the reason I keep talking about this is because I just kind of wanted to take a look at it. Jeffrey Palmer, who we both work with, said he built it and took it all the way to Diamond, and he's loving it. And so I kind of tinkered on Arena and realized I'm four or five cards away from having the whole thing built because I just had, you know, from different decks, had different stuff here. This is a Simic Flash deck, and it incorporates things like Baron, and I think most notably Baron and that new Lofty Denial are the and Rewind, of course. Rewind and Night Pack Ambusher. You've already talked about that. But this was your deck. How did you come up with it? What are your thoughts?
I basically looked at Rewind, and I'm like, I want to make a deck that's good that tries to maximize Rewind, and that the starting point, of course, was Simic Flash. It you know, because I really wanted to play Rewind and Night Pack Ambusher. There's a chance you want to splash white because Teferi Time Raveler is just a messed up card. So having access to Teferi is never a bad thing. But I started with four Ambusher, four Growth Spiral, four Rewind, and kind of filled it out from there. I think Brazen Borrower is also a nice one. Rewind in a Borrower is fine. Spectral Sailor, you don't want to draw too many, so I only have a couple in there. But there's another new card, Lofty Denial, that I think it could be just a great standard card. It's one in a blue counter target spell unless they pay one. But if you have a flying creature, they have to pay four instead. So part of the reason I like this is on turn two, this just counters anything you need because on turn two, they would usually like won't have a mana left or turn three even. And then later in the game, you have Shark Typhoon, Brazen Borrower, and Spectral Sailor to make it into a super mana leak because a two mana make them pay four counters. Pretty close to a hard counter, even in the middle of the game. It's only in the late game where it really starts to fall off. So adding another card that's, I think, much better than Quench is really strong because Quench is good on turn two and three and just gets pretty bad after that. I think this Lofty Denial is still good on turn two or three, but then also is fine later in the game. And then, you kind of just even it out with a couple other counters, Shark Typhoon. That's also a really good card for the Flash deck. And overall, I think the deck is pretty sweet. I don't know. I mean, it needs some tuning, but I do like where it started.
I agree. I think the most notable thing is it's a Simic deck that doesn't have Uro Main. So
yeah, I tried to put all instants in the deck, basically.
Yeah. So I see that. Everything has Flash or is instant. And I like that. I like that part of it. It's one of the things I really like about the deck. So any other idea what you may tinker with next in terms of a standard, the new standard in constructed?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think that I'm probably going to spend some time trying to make sure Team Erek is optimized. I think that's still a great deck. I do enjoy playing it. There's a variety of different ways to make Bant work, and Sublime Epiphany is a card I really want to see if I can make work. This is the four blue instant counter a spell, counter an activated ability, copy one of your creatures, draw a card, bounce a permanent, and
does everything.
He's just the mega cryptic. It's six mana, which is a lot, but it seems like it could be quite the beating if it works out.
Yeah, it's a really interesting card, and that's one. I think you gave it. Did you give it the highest rating?
Yeah, it's a perfect score in limited. And in constructed, I think it's in the middle of the pack in terms of constructed playables, but it's powerful enough that I would like to see how it works.
Awesome. Well, we'll have to pay attention and see what, I guess we'll probably see that on CFB Pro in the future, hopefully see something like that. Well, there we have it, guys. That's our Magic FM for the week. It's a really special thank you. As much as I give Luis a bad time, I have to say, I was really looking forward. I was talking to Elaine before I went live. I'm like, I'm on Magic FM. I'm so busy, but it's nice to always connect with Luis. So thank you, Luis. Thanks for stepping in.
Of course.
I know Gabby was busy, so it was wonderful having you, as it always is. If you want to keep up to date on things on Magic FM, give us a follow. We are at Magic FM Podcast on Twitter. Of course, I am Moshi Scanlon at the guy on the left. Wow, that's old. I am Moshi Scanlon, the guy on the left at Moshi Scanlon. having changed that number at Moshi Scanlon across all social media platforms. He is Luis Scott Vargas at LSV. Luis, are you going to be streaming anytime this soon, this weekend or anything?
I'm doing coverage of the CFP Pro Showdown tomorrow.
Of course.
We're recording this on Friday, so I guess it would be today by the time I think most people listen to it or yesterday, who knows. But as for streaming, I'm not sure. I haven't figured out when if I'm going to do that.
Well, check that out. You know, when he is available, Luis is a lot of fun to watch. twitch.tv/LSV and give him a follow at LSV so you know when he's going live, because that's your best way to know. That's how I always am like, oh,
Luis, yeah, I always tweet it out because I don't have a stream schedule.
Yeah. So that's very awesome. If you're listening to us on the podcast, give us a try on video. We are available at channelfireball.com or youtube.com/channelfireball. That does it for this week. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. And Gabby should be back next week. We should be hanging out with Gabby. Looking forward to that. Until then, be wonderful to yourselves. Be wonderful to each other. We'll see you next time.